AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Matt, Patrick here today. Patrick, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I showed up today unlike the Vikings defense. I'm just kidding.
We already went through all that with them. Good to have you here today. If you did not notice, we have a very strange, odd color sun today. So that's a little bit odd. So coming up here in just a few moments here, we're going to have John Olson going to join us. He's Democrat of the Day. Senate District 20 is his district. He's going to be kind enough to join us today to talk a little bit about his campaign. But, this morning, once again, if you went out and you looked out at the sunrise this morning, I mean, it is the reason why, and right now it looks a little orangish outside, it's forest fires in California. You know, and I think that's the crazy part about the whole thing is that you think about the distance, that smoke, how much smoke has got to be getting generated for it to be here, and we are seeing the effects of it here. I mean, it just is it is unbelievable in regards to that, and it's remarkable. And I don't know how anyone can look at this and not see the catastrophic nature of these forest fires. As a matter of fact, can I just say, we've had I can't ever remember a year where it seemed like almost every week we have another massive natural disaster going on. You know, tornadoes or fire tornadoes or forest fires. We got another hurricane. Was it Sally is getting ready to slam into the Alabama Mississippi shoreline? This is, you want to still want to believe climate change isn't real. That's fine. But, you know, it eventually when I think the only time that some of these people are going to understand that this stuff is real is when all of a sudden their insurance company says, we're not going to insure your house. And they're like, hey, maybe there is something to this climate change. That'll probably be the only time that they finally come around to it. But that's why you're getting that weird orange sunrise and sunshine right now. That's forest fires. 952-946-6205. John Olson is going to be our Democrat of the day today. Senate District 20, which is just kind of south and west here of the Twin Cities metro area. He's kind enough today to join us to talk about his campaign. John, how are you today?
I'm having a great day. How about you?
I'm doing very well. It is kind of pretty to have orange sunshine. Are you seeing it down there where you're at in your district?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I noticed that this morning I had I actually teach over at Carleton College, and my first class was of the term started this morning, and I left home about 7 o'clock, and the sun was starting to come up, and it was a tremendously red sun, and I thought to myself, well, I can see the fires are drifting our way.
Well, so. It is just remarkable that they're that bad out there, and hopefully everyone out there is safe, and hopefully they can get those under control before too long. We here in Minnesota, we just the worst thing we've got is the strange color to the sunrise, which is I guess a blessing, but at the same time, it has been stressful times indeed, which makes someone ask someone like you, John, what prompted you to run for office this year, this time around?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I did a career in the U.S. Navy. I spent 4 years at Annapolis and then 21 years on active duty as an intelligence officer.
Thank you for your service.
And I retired and came back home in 2011. And I was fine just sort of sitting back and helping my mom and my brother take care of my dad, who was in the advanced stages of Alzheimer's at that point. And I got into a bit of a teaching career, Metro State University and their School of Law Enforcement and Criminal Justice. And then I've been teaching over at Carleton College pretty regularly in their political science department as well. But I watched with dismay at the election results in 2016, couldn't believe what was happening to our country. And over the course of the last few years, I've been, deeply disturbed by the systemic dismantling of our national institutions and the creation of a truly hyper-partisan political divide in our state. And I decided that I thought, based on my 25 years of leadership experience, including a tour as a diplomat in as a U.S. Naval Attaché in Helsinki, Finland, and my time teaching courses here over the last 8 years, that I had more to give, more in the tank to give to my community. And I made the fateful decision almost a year ago now in early October to jump into this race because I really want to try and heal this partisan divide. And I want to get us away from politics and get us back to public policy where we actually solve these shared challenges we face as Minnesotans. So that's my motivation for running is to basically solve problems. It's what I've been doing my entire adult life.
John, thank you very much for your service, by the way. I'm U.S. Army for 4 years, didn't have nearly the prestigious career you did, but my goodness, what an actual honor to have you as a Minnesotan, you know, with the great career you've had, and the and it's just a gem to have you teaching here in universities, I imagine, to bring your life experience to those processes. You talk about the hyper-partisan nature. And I understand, and there's this tendency to sort of say, hey, both sides, you got to come to the table. The problem that we've had is we have one political party who feels bipartisan is allowing the Democrats into the room to sit down and witness what they do. And I mean, because I get frustrated at the amount of times I see accolade after and concession after accolade and concession from the Democrats to just try to get four Republicans or one Republican to sign onto a bill. The reality is how talk about the challenge of trying to fix a system which, for the most part, I mean, I hear what you're saying. You want to work with the other side. I remember Reagan Republicans. They used to work together with Democrats all the time. How can you fix this system if the one side is not even willing to, and most of the time, to even sit down and talk with you?
That's a great question as well. I appreciate you asking it. I'm glad you're throwing the softball ones to me rather than the fastballs with a hell of a lot of English on them. So here's what I would say. I too remember what it was like here in Minnesota when all of us considered ourselves to be both fiscal conservatives and social liberals at the same time. And I left home in 1986 to go off on my Navy career. I was frankly deeply dismayed at the divide that I saw when I got back home, and it's only become worse. And I think part of that is that we've lost the ability to trust one another. And without trust, you're never going to be able to move forward in a meaningful way. So I from my perspective as somebody who spent, 25 years out there, in the Navy, generally speaking, amongst a lot of people who were more conservative than me, but all of us committed to the future of this nation, every one of us a patriot, caring deeply about our nation, regardless of our political views. I think part of what I bring to the table as a retired commander in the Navy is the ability to reach across the aisle in a truly meaningful way, to speak to people on the conservative side. And now, both of our parties have people who kind of move out to the far ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
But there are a lot of people in the middle who still want to work together. So the question is, can you achieve a victory just in reaching across the aisle and establishing that kind of trust once again to sit down and talk about meaningful solutions? And what my experiences have been here in this district that is a truly purple district is that I've had good success going and talking with people who were far more conservative than me. But they respect the service that I gave to this nation. They're willing to listen to what I have to say. And we start the dialogue. And that is where it begins. You start that dialogue. You build trust. You move forward in ways where we respect each other's opinions and views. And we try to find places where we can meet in the middle or find common ground. And once we start to establish those kinds of relationships and achieve those small breakthroughs, we can open it up for much larger breakthroughs. And I would tell you that's what diplomacy is all about. I have a little bit of experience in that world.
Well, and also should be mentioned, Jesse Ventura won the governor's race. Why? Because he came on out and sounded like a throwback. I'm a fiscal conservative. I'm a socially liberal. And, that does resonate. A lot of people, in matter of fact, I mean, I'm not for, wasting finances, but at the same time.
No, nobody is.
Exactly. So there is that appeal there. Your district, too, and I think one of the things that you talk about, you've got a district where we should talk a little bit about higher education. You're Northfield, so I believe St. Olaf is in your district.
Fenwolf and Carlton are both in Northfield. I actually live in Cedar Lake Township to the west of Elko and Newmarket, but I do teach at Carlton. So, and I have a lot of the college students at both campuses have jumped in to help me with my campaign, and I'm deeply appreciative for their enthusiasm and support.
Well, and also you although you're not seeing, I don't think St. Peter's in Senate District 20. Obviously, you have the impact of the college that's there too. Talk about this, because I mean, you truly have one of your industries this district has to look at is higher education.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I would tell you that, you know, I'm in the interview process right now, trying to get hired by the people of my district to represent them in St. Paul. And if you care deeply like I do about public service, you're not running on your own issues. You shouldn't be out there trying to grind an axe on your own personal issues. Your goal should be to represent the people of your district on the issues that matter the most to them. And very briefly, I would just tell you that hands down, number one across the board, all the people that I've talked to, their biggest concern has been the rising cost of healthcare and everything connected to that. And second, because we live in a farm heavy district, has been the impacts on farmers over, you know, government policies and weather and COVID over the last 3 years. And then third has been education, frankly. Everybody wants their kid or their grandkid to do better than they did. And we know that the mechanism to achieve that is a good education. And Minnesota, when I was a kid, set the bar nationally as one of the top states in the union for our educational outcomes. We still have a really well-educated population. That's one of the reasons why we do so well economically here with a lot of the higher tech companies that we have in our state. But I think we can do a heck of a lot more. So not only are we talking about the compulsory education, K through 12, I think we need to look hard at making bigger investments in the pre-K, early childhood education, to get kids on the right path. And then, frankly, we need to find ways to lower the cost of tuition for students who enter college, because nobody should go into tremendous debt to get a bachelor's degree or advanced degrees when that's really a strategic investment in the future of our state and in the economy of our state. And let me add one more thing. We know that about 30% of the students who graduate from high school in the state of Minnesota, they don't go on to college because they don't want to, or they're just not interested in, or they're interested in some other profession. But right now, we don't do nearly enough to prepare those high school students for a career track right after they graduate from high school. So I've been advocating on behalf of programs where public-private partnership, where we connect juniors and seniors in high school with meaningful career paths that they can look at and learn about, maybe start even in an apprenticeship program. So right after the day after they graduate, they might be able to go to work as a real apprentice or even at a journeyman level in one of the skilled trades. And I don't know if you've had any tradespeople over working at your house lately, but I can tell you they make good money.
it's a pretty
penny that they're able to charge. So that's a good career path.
I can't tell you how glad. I mean, we seem to. When I was a kid, there was always people went to the military, someone went to college, someone into the trades, and there seems to have been this vilification of the trades route.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I talked to a lot of the union guys here. They have training programs. They want people. They got more work than they know what to do with. Carpenters, pipe fitters, plumbers, they need people. And if we actually presented that as is more of the viable option, I have no idea how the vilification of it happened. But it almost it's beneath us to have this. No, it's not. That's a good job that's going to pay you good money and give you a good life and good skill set. And I think that's – you're exactly right. I mean, making sure those options on the table – other than either college or military or maybe going to the farm, having having those other options on the table, I think, are so important, because I think there feels like there is a limit there.
Yeah, and frankly, on that same vein with the skilled trades and a lot of these other professions that organized labor represents, I would tell you that I care deeply about the Democrat Farmer Labor Party. I was raised in a union family. My dad was a career public school teacher in Bloomington. My grandfather retired out of a job serving as the secretary treasurer of Teamsters Local 289. And I've got a bunch of cousins who are in various trades as well. So for me, I grew up in a union family, and I believe deeply that the Democrat Farmer Labor Party is the best party to represent not only organized labor, but farmers too. And I think we, as the DFL party, have to get back to the, to remembering about the fact that not only do we care deeply about the environment, but we care deeply about outcomes for farmers and rewarding them for being the good stewards of the land they are, and putting a heck of a lot more emphasis on protecting organized labor going forward, because we need to regrow the numbers of people in the organized labor movement. It gives them a heck of a lot more bargaining power, and then government can be involved a heck of a lot less than it is right now in trying to establish fair working conditions, because a powerful labor union will do that very effectively all on its own.
I've been to rural Minnesota a few times in the last few weeks, and I go on out. And as a matter of fact, I was down in Belle Plaine in your district. And one of the things people say is, well, go look in the country and look at the signs. And they're talking about the Trump signs. But the signs I was seeing, I'd see a group of farmhouses, and I'd see one house decked out in Trump gear. But what I was also seeing is three more houses right next to it for sale. You talk about the farmers. Let's talk about the margins here. Farming is, you know, you don't have a $24,000, $25,000 a year margin anyway on that business. And there's a lot that the anxiety, the frustration, the depression that's coming into the ag sector right now, because they're seeing farmers who have seen their lifelong markets dry up because of this trade fiasco that Trump started. And the question is, where are we going to have a market for our products? This is it's a complex issue, but obviously there are some things the state can do to step in to help out the farmer.
Yeah. So here's what I would tell you, and this is coming from a guy who grew up in South Minneapolis. Did I have an uncle who owned a farm? Yeah. Was he a full-time farmer? No, not really. He rented out his land to other people who were professional farmers. But then I went off and spent, you know, 25 years of my life in the Navy, and came back home to Minnesota, and I've been teaching college classes. So I really didn't have a lot of background in ag until about a year ago when I stepped into this race. So it's been a little bit like drinking from a fire hose, trying to understand the ag industry here in the state of Minnesota, which is an incredibly important sector, business sector for the economy of our state. But what I've come to see as an outsider looking in, which I think is a kind of a benefit when you're looking at very complex issues, to have an opportunity to look at it in a very objective way, is that the whole system right now is designed such that the farmers, at the very beginning of the whole food supply chain, they take the greatest risk. They spend an awful lot, you know, to get row crops in the ground or working a year in advance on raising livestock of whatever kind they choose to do. You know, they got to have the shackle space and the processing side. But they put all of this effort in at the very beginning of the process. And then the rest of it is completely out of their hands. They have virtually no say in what happens after things leave their farm. So if you look at the fact that the processors, and there's been a consolidation in the numbers of processors out there on the livestock side, the distribution side, and then the retail side for the whole food supply chain. All three of those other areas, they make money no matter what's going on. But the farmers, they are really vulnerable to interruptions in the supply chain or impacts based on federal policy, trade policy, and things like that. So Minnesota farmers have been getting kicked in the kneecaps the last 3 years, frankly.
Yeah.
By not only the trade practices of this administration, but also the weather last year hammered a lot of the row croppers. And then this year, COVID really disrupted the livestock folks. Now, things are getting back to normal. They're getting a little bit better. But still, it's a lack of consistency. It's a lack of certainty as to what the markets are going to look like. And I would say that at a state level, we should look long and hard about how we maybe address the overall system so that we give a little more power back to the farmers, who are the most important people in the whole food supply chain process. And frankly, you know, this is one of those things that I've come to be very frustrated about. DFL policies need to do more for Minnesota's farmers. I mean, farmers were a core element of our party for decades, and we've sort of lost them over the last 15 years. And frankly, I'm angry about that. I am making it part of my mission to bring the F back into the DFL, and frankly, to retain the L in the DFL, because I'm a little concerned about a lot of the labor groups. I don't know if we've effectively represented them as well as we should have, and that's going to change when I get to St. Paul in January.
I couldn't agree with you more. As a matter of fact, you are the first politician that has done something, that has addressed something that I have thought about for a while, which is trying to offset ag finances at the beginning of the season so you are not having, come August and September, farmers sitting there and wondering, is this the year I lose the farm? If we don't look at how the financial system, the financial metrics around agriculture works, and we address that and not make it such a gun to the farmer's head, then this is 100%. I agree with you wholeheartedly. This is a system, much like how education funding in rural America has failed. You have to look at how the ag financing is, because it shouldn't be a make or break thing. It shouldn't be a year of stress just to see if you make it. I mean, that's just, I agree with that wholeheartedly.
It's been kind of heartbreaking, frankly, going around the district and talking to farmers in all different areas of ag, and hear the stress in their voices and kind of the agony they feel about, are they going to make it or not?
Yeah.
I mean, when you're $2 million in the hole, hoping that, you know, your production for that year is going to help offset some of that, and you're going to have a good year next year to try and get the rest of that debt out. I mean, it's crazy to me how this whole ag system works today, because it's designed to drive the family farm out of business and to consolidate into ever larger operations so that eventually factory farming scale will take over.
I worked for 5 years in Iowa. You are 100% correct. And I just keep asking myself, if we just basically fronted a year's worth of cost for every farmer, the financial well-being of rural America would almost overnight be fixed. And considering the amount of money we're spending on these ag, you know, programs right now, and some of these, you know, these kickbacks that are going primarily to the large corporate farms, if we just took half that money and just went into the small farms, my goodness, almost every community in this country would have the best financial year in 50 years. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I would tell you this. Let me finish with this, and then I'm sure you want to move on to your next topic. But, you know, here in Minnesota, we have always prized our family farmers in our state. And the system right now is designed, like we said, to drive them out in favor of ever larger combinations. So I think it's time right now, while all of these things are going on that have disrupted the ag system, do we as Minnesotans care enough about our fellow Minnesotans who have lived on farms for generations, people who want to get into farming now, new farmers? Do we care enough about that system? Do we care about the people who have an emotional connection to the land, who want to be good stewards of the land and care for the land? Do we prize that enough to protect those people from the market forces that are designed, frankly, at a federal level, to drive people out so that industrial scale farming takes over? And I think that's a question we need to, that's a topic we need to discuss as members of this state. And certainly it's something we need to have an open discussion about at the state legislature. Because if we care about it, then we better start putting our money where our mouth is, and start setting up family farmers for success.
Well, and you said it. We need someone who has the guts to bring this topic up, because this is a long, hard look in the mirror, especially on how we treat our ag sector. And if we don't do this, John, my goodness, I apologize. I said I was going to take 20 minutes. We were about 20. We were going a little bit longer now. John Olson for Minnesota Senate. This is Senate District 20 once again. I'm going to say this. This is so far my highest recommendation. Sweet Lord, we need John Olson in St. Paul. Holy cow. Just on the ag sector, the trades ideas. My God, these are ideas we need in the DFL to make that DFL as vibrant as it has ever been. John, if people want to volunteer, once again, you're just southwest of the metro. And I tell people all this all the time. Help your local DFLers by all means. But if you're in a relatively safe district, get out, help John Olson, Senate District 20, just once again, just south and west of the metro area, Northfield, Belle Plaine, down in that direction. If people want to volunteer or donate, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so they can go to my campaign website. It's John, J-O-N. That's how I spell it, John. It's John Olson for MN Senate, and the Olson is O-L-S-O-N. So J-O-N-O-L-S-O-N, John Olson for MN Senate.com. They can find all kinds of information about me on there. Unlike most candidates, I have put forward very detailed policy papers on the positions I've taken so far, because I believe strongly in the power of public policy, and I want people to know exactly who I am and what I stand for. And that is very different than my opponent.
by all means, I apologize for going along with you, but when you get to St. Paul, when we get you into St. Paul, you're going to come back. I want to talk to you every time we have an ag issue because, my goodness, this is the breath of fresh air. I mean, the Democratic Party is a vibrant party, but if it's going to be a vibrant party, it's got to be a vibrant party across the board. And John is bringing back some old school ideas that we need to remember for the DFL. John Olson for MNSenate.com. John, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me on. You have a great afternoon.
My pleasure. My strongest recommendation. Holy cow. I mean, you have to have some guts to address that farm issue, that we should not have an ag sector that's basically, you know, banking everything at the beginning of the year and just hoping things work out. If we just took some of that federal dollars that we'd use to bail out big corporate farms and big corporate ag businesses, and we gave it to the family farmer and said, we're going to front you this year, so that they would just stop that process. Not only would it revitalize the agricultural sector as a whole, but it would revitalize rural America like we have never seen. And I'll tell you what, if the DFL did that, Republicans would have nowhere to run. Because I guarantee you that the rural parts of the state would be like, oh, the heck with you guys. You guys have done nothing for us. We're going back to the DFL. Absolutely. 952-946-6205. Patrick, we're way long. Sorry, my bad. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Now, more than ever, we are being faced daily with the topic of human mortality. And for many people, estate planning has been top of mind. Getting your estate planning done now can be easy and cost-effective. Shroman Law offers virtual options for initial consultations so that new clients can safely initiate the process. With many facing uncertain financial situations, Shroman Law also offers affordable fees for legal documents. Learn more at ShromanLaw.com. That's ShromenLaw.com.
Hello, this is Ellie Krug from Ellie 2.0 Radio on Mondays from 2 to 3 p.m. Many listeners know that I train on human inclusivity and on how to be welcoming to diverse humans. Today, organizations of all sizes find that they need to train team members on equity and dismantling racism. I can do that. Many say that my trainings change how they see the world. And now I'm doing all of my work online so everyone can attend regardless of where you're located. For more information, go to elliekrug.com. Thank you. I look forward to hearing from you.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around. Check us out online. And when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
I'm Candy Broffel, publisher of the Twin Cities edition of Natural Awakenings magazine and host of Green Tea Conversations, a new show for people who are on a journey to take responsibility for their health and play a more active role in their family's well-being. Join me every Sunday at 10 a.m. as I interview local experts who share the latest in natural holistic approaches in a fun and informative way. So grab a cup of tea and join the conversation as we awaken to natural health. Visit us at naturaltwincities.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Wow. No, you. If you did that, if you went to the family farm and said, you know what, we are going to front you, say, $30,000 per farm. We're going to cover your costs so that you basically you're not nearly as stressed out as you are, and do it once. And what you then set up is you say, okay, then, you know, you don't have to worry about this year, and then your profits, hopefully, good, move forward. He's right about one thing. The system we got in place right now is designed to kill the family farm. And when you go into rural Minnesota, that's what you see. For sale, for sale. Don't ignore the Trump signs. Look at, for God's sakes, go out into rural Minnesota and look at the for sale signs. There's the real legacy of the Trump administration. Communities that used to have 3,000 people having 2,000 people. That's what the real legacy is. So, real quickly here, we got some good news for you. Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club, one of our favorite places. We have going to be doing a debate watch party coming up here on the 29th of September. That is the first debate. Now, we're going to have more details coming to you soon, okay? But I want you to kind of get this on your calendar at Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club, Highway 65, Moore Lake, just north of 694. The 29th, there are going to be, and I'm going to be very honest, and this is understandable, I think, in this day and age, there are going to be a very limited amount of tickets with social distancing and all that good stuff. It's not going to be like the debate parties we've had where we've had, you know, packed facilities. We are going to have to do social distancing. We're going to have rules here. So tickets, this is not one of those things you're going to be able probably to wait too long to get tickets. So you want to get tickets. We'll have details up soon. Once again, keep an eye out for this. Once again, the debate watching party, Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club, September 29th. More details to come right here from AM 950. Well, let's take a break. We'll get caught back up. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hi, this is Chad Hobart with Social Media MN. If you're running for office or a grassroots ballot initiative, getting out door-to-door made a lot of sense before coronavirus. Progressive candidates historically win elections with one-to-one voter contact, door-knocking, and by organizing. With coronavirus, candidates and ballot initiatives need to pivot and recalibrate with a digital marketing strategy to provide one-to-one voter contact and organizing opportunities. An effective digital strategy will likely determine if your race goes blue this year or whether you're singing the blues. So, if you want to be singing Hail to the Chief on Election Day, Social Media MN can help. For a hassle-free consultation, contact us today at 763-244-4058. That's 763-244-4058. Or visit us online at socialmediamn.com. That's socialmediamn.com.
Hi, this is Matt McNeil. Today, with the uncertainty going on, we're all looking to find a way to make our dollar go further. That's why I suggest your next vehicle is a Toyota from Rudy Luther Toyota. Not only do I have a newer Toyota, I also have a 2006 Sienna, and it still runs great. 14 years and 170,000 miles later. I love Toyotas, and they're made to last, and they have never let me down. And with maintenance from Rudy Luther, your vehicle will take care of you and save even more money with the Luther Advantage card with your vehicle purchase. Rudy Luther Toyota at 394 and 169 west of Minneapolis.
Standard Heating and Air Conditioning's Fall Triple Savings Sale is back by popular demand, offering savings up to $2,420 on the purchase of a new furnace and air conditioner during September. You don't want to miss out on this fall deal. Start preparing for furnace season now and take advantage of some of the biggest savings of the year. That's savings in manufacturer rebates, utility rebates, and September promotions. Phone lines are open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., 7 days a week. Visit standardheating.com/special offers.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for sunny skies today with a high near 83. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 59. Wednesday, sunny with a high near 71. And Thursday, sunny with a high around 62. If your home may have sustained damage from the recent summer storms we had, call Snap Construction, one of the most well-reviewed window, siding, and window companies. They stand behind their work with a lifetime craftsmanship warranty and can walk you through the entire insurance process. Get your free estimate today by calling Snap Construction at 612-333-SNAP.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. Five COVID-19 deaths, 432 infections with the coronavirus that were reported on Tuesday by Minnesota state health officials, who urged patients to keep sick children at home to avert new school-fueled wave of pandemic. I wrote this earlier on the social media networks. My experience is there's about 10% of parents who will knowingly send a kid sick to school. Now, do I think that coronavirus will change that? No, I don't. I really don't. I think that maybe the parents will talk to the kids, like, don't let anyone know you're sick. But, no, the you know, my experience has been that, you know, there are about 10% of parents who will send a sick kid to school. That's why this is, I think we are a long way away from getting this pandemic dealt with. Some indicators of the severity of the pandemic have taken some good turns, though, with the current positivity rate and diagnostic testing dipping back below 5%, COVID-19 hospitalizations reaching a two-month low this week. The state on Tuesday reported only 238 COVID hospitalizations, including 131 people in intensive care. On the other hand, 65 deaths reported since last Tuesday are the most in a seven-day period since late June. The state in total has reported 1,927 COVID deaths, 85,351 lab-confirmed infections with the COVID-19. State Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm on Tuesday said the latest numbers reflect a high but manageable growth in infections in the cases this summer that had been surprising exponential growth in other states. The reopening of schools. As a matter of fact, today I've got – I mean, we've got my son. It's move-in day at the U. And so now they've got a lot of precautions out there. And one of the things we don't quite know is if it was a traditional moving-in day, and this, even though this is my first one, I've been around college campuses. And I was at KASI in Ames with the Iowa State University down there. We're the flagship for them. And so, you know, I've been around colleges, and generally what would happen is mom and dad pull up, we got the car full, we haul the stuff up to the room, mom basically makes the bed the one time the bed's going to be made over the next 4 years, and then you get maybe a little walk around the campus, and you say goodbyes, and off you go. Well, I don't even know if we're going to be allowed up into the dorm room, if you want to know the truth. We're going to take our son over and drop him off, but I mean, I know that it would not surprise me. They said, nope, you know, you say goodbye in the parking lot. He will give you a trailer. He can load his stuff up and haul it up there. But, you know, that's it. So I don't know. I'm very concerned. There are going to be a lot of people. There are going to be a lot of people who in the next few years are going to try to insist that they didn't demand football get played, and they weren't the ones that were demanding in-person classes. I have a feeling this is going to get bad again, because if you ever look at the history of pandemics, generally fall, when people start staying inside, are around more people, you know, you're not kind of out in the, you know, moving around as much. When they start getting more closed in, things start going bad. So keep that in mind. People are heading on out, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Now, there is something I've talked about, and I talked about with George Floyd, and I talked about after that. I mean, one of the things I like to talk about are things which point out the racial inequity in America, that if we don't understand the problem, if we don't see the problem, then we can't solve the problem. And that is – and trust me right now, you know, this is – as much as we thought George Floyd was going to change things, right now there is a massive pushback from the right to say, no, we're not going to change anything. And there are two stories which I want to point out how we address things, how things get addressed differently here. The first of all is a story, and City Pages has had this. There is a Christians for COVID concert that apparently took place in the Lake Street Kmart parking lot that Minneapolis was, you know, they were aware of it, but they apparently didn't give authorization for it. And if you've seen the photos of this you know, clown car show, all these people, no one's social distancing, hardly anyone's wearing a mask. It's a super spreader event. The event went on Unity Revival, an offshoot of the International Outreach Church, a Burnsville House of God founded by Reverend Charles Caruco and his wife Lindsay. Basically, it's a group down there that's been trying to. They seem to be trying to take advantage of the unrest which happened with George Floyd to kind of increase their visibility. the organizer that initiated the process to getting permits to hold the outdoor concert on city-owned property. The city was in contact with the Unity Revival Movement, a newly formed religious outfit, and direct response to George Floyd's murder by Minneapolis police. Minneapolis told Unity Revival it wasn't permitted for the concert and asked organizers to remove any references online to the concert. The city chose not to ask police to arrest trespassers during the event, says Hill, who adds some sort of retroactive enforcement action is being considered. Okay. So, bunch of white people show up for a Christian concert at the Kmart on Lake Street. They're not supposed to be there. They're having their concert. And the city chose not to ask police to arrest trespassers during the event. I'm going to take a guess here that if that was African Americans having a concert out at the Kmart on Lake Street, I'm going to guess the police were going to have a little more of a proactive stance on that. I'm just, call it a guess, a suspicion. But I'm going to guess that if this was, if you look at the pictures and the city pages has the pictures of this concert, if you look at the pictures of this concert, yeah, it clearly is that the, a relatively, Caucasian crowd that is out there. But I guess that's the part which is, I have a little bit of a problem with that because I just do not feel as if that would be treated the same way if it was African Americans. And in the same sense, and I've talked about this before, that for years, for years we've talked about this. Remember when they had the fireworks on the 4th of July on Lake Minnetonka and the guy had died? They got reports of a man in the water and they're trying to get there and the boats were refusing to move because they didn't want to give their spot for the fireworks. And I said to myself, if that was a bunch of black men in North Minneapolis refusing to move their cars, do you think the police would tolerate that? No. But, the police seemed down the Lake Minnetonka seemed, oh, well, we're so sorry to get in your way of the fireworks. We're just trying to save a human life. I don't tolerate this stuff. And, if you have someone who's trespassing, who's having a concert, I can understand you may want to say, well, we don't want to upset people, but if they're breaking the law and they're not supposed to be there, if they're too stupid to try to save themselves, I guess maybe that's the question is how much do we try to save these people who don't seem to be really taking any effort to save themselves? The other story that I saw that really, in my mind, highlights a really different standard when we're talking about minorities and black people versus white people. And that's the Edina story. And I wrote about this morning on social media. In Edina, if you didn't see the story, there was an unfortunate story that occurred out there where a person was shot in the parking lot of Fairview Southdale. A man suspected of shooting a doctor in the head outside of Edina Hospital during a robbery remains at large, though. Police responded to reports of the shooting outside of the Health Fairview office in France Avenue, just south of 62 before 9 p.m. The source said the police incident told the Star Tribune the victim was a doctor who was being robbed and was shot when he resisted. He was shot in the head but still described the suspect, so it doesn't sound like it's life-threatening, which is good. Police have yet to disclose the man's identity other than he's 45 years old and he lives in Eagan. In the meantime, they put out the description. A suspect is an Asian man in his 30s with a shaved head and a tattoo on the right side of his neck. He was wearing sweatpants. All right. So we've had some problems lately over at Fairview Southdale in Edina, that area there. Now, this is a fairly serious crime. No one's going to deny that. Man is getting robbed in a parking ramp in Edina and is shot in the head when he refuses to give the criminal what he wants. And like I said, this is not the first time we've had problems over in that area. You do get, with the stores, with the shopping that's over in Edina off of France Avenue in the Southdale area, there are some issues there. But so far this morning, I have yet to see any of the people who have been attacking Minneapolis go after Edina. even after the shooting, saying, well, Edina needs to clean itself up. It's scary there. Antifa gangs are controlling the streets. It's not safe to go there. You know? Have you heard that? I've heard that lately when it comes to Minneapolis. When there's a crime that happens in Minneapolis, oh, my God. Oh, it's a war zone in Minneapolis. It's a war zone. It's a war zone. You know, you're not going to solve this problem until you address it and you look at it straight in the face. And looking at this problem, this is what it is. Oh, wealthy white people. Well, this is just some outside intruder. Likely. I don't know if they know if this person lived in Edina or not. But it's likely this person was not from Edina, came into the district. He did this heinous crime and fled out of the district. Oh, thank God Edina's safe. You know, well, relatively. But even though, I mean, what have we learned from the problems that happened after the George Floyd murder and as well? How many people from out of the metro area have been arrested? Out of the city of Minneapolis have been arrested. But does anyone on the right give them any? Well, you know, before you criticize Minneapolis, this is a guy from Anoka, or this is a guy from Lakeville, or this is a guy from you know, Fergus Falls. This is not guys from Minneapolis. No one gives that little nuance there. No one's rushing to, well, that's not necessarily the people of the city of Minneapolis. It's just, it's a crime zone. It's horrible. Why? A lot more minorities, less white people, and less income. That is, so the narrative they want to put forward is war zone Minneapolis, just an unfortunate incident in Edina. Well, you know, if you're having problems in Edina, and once again, this is not the one time that there's been a problem out there. They've had some problems out in Edina over by the Southdale Shopping Center. If you're going to have this standard, well, then just be consistent with it. I know. The reason why the standard exists is you're trying to scare white people into voting for Trump. And you're not going to be able to do that by basically fairly using the same standard used for Minneapolis on Edina. But the reality is that I see you. I see you. I see what you're doing here. I see how you put caveats and excuses and, we shouldn't badmouth Edina. That's not bad. But Minneapolis, I see you. And if we don't point this out when it does happen, And my goal here is not, and by the way, Edina guy, yes, I'm sorry. I know that you don't like me that much, but I'm not trying to badmouth Edina. I'm not trying to vilify your suburb. I'd say you're not. How dare you make me utter the phrase Edina from your tainted mouth. No, we're fine. Accidents happen. Nothing that bad. All right. Maybe we should have that standard for Minneapolis. Maybe we should have that standard for Minneapolis, or at least say, you know, hey, bad things happen in Minneapolis, but my God, look at the people that are not from Minneapolis coming into the city and causing the problems. Heaven forbid facts twiddle into our narrative. Heaven forbid. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take our final break and come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
The Blaisdell in Minneapolis has two great options for weddings. The Blaisdell Parlor provides an intimate ceremony space with beautiful greenery surrounding the fireplace. Or for those preferring an outdoor ceremony, the Blaisdell Courtyard, offering a breathtaking space to say I do, surrounded by loved ones and a stunning landscape. If you or a family member was planning on postponing a wedding due to COVID-19, well, this is your chance to make the marriage official while still planning for a reception at a later date. More information and available dates at theblaisdell.com.
Hi, I'm Scott Peterson with the Minnesota News Network, inviting you to join us for Minnesota Matters. This week, Minnesota Education Commissioner Mary Catherine Ricker has everything parents and students need to know for the start of the school year. Helping Hands Minnesota is working to meet demand for those in need of food statewide, and an update on college sports and how it's being impacted by COVID-19 from Gopher basketball coach Richard Pitino. Tune us in right here or at minnesotanewsnetwork.com.
Listen to Minnesota Matters every weekend, Sunday mornings at 6:30 on AM 950. Hi, this is Ken Hagland, host of Living Healthy and Aging Well, inviting you to listen to our new show airing on Saturdays from noon to one, where we talk about your health and your life and provide insights to living and aging well. Each week, we provide answers to important questions regarding health care, elder care, end-of-life care, and caregiver support to help you and your loved ones plan for the future and enjoy your highest quality of life today. Please join us every Saturday from noon to one for Living Healthy and Aging Well.
Join Stonewall DFL, the LGBTQ caucus of the DFL, in celebrating 40 years of solidarity, a virtual event on Thursday, September 17th at 7 p.m. featuring Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin and local community leaders. Support Stonewall's work to elect LGBTQ and ally DFLers across Minnesota to win the Minnesota Senate and pass a pro-LGBTQ agenda in 2021. Register for free at mnstonewalldfl.org.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Two quick hits here. This is just sad. The family of Philando Castile said that a memorial garden in his honor was vandalized. The garden is located in Falcon Heights, close to where Castile was shot and killed by police during a traffic stop in 2016. Castile's family said that several items are now missing from the memorial. It's painful, said Philando's uncle. It makes you angry, and it hurts that someone would violate this place considered to be sacred. Well, racists are jackasses, and I don't know for sure. I can't say with an absolute, but my guess would be racist idiots. That would be it. Also, the KSTP had a report. Ramsey County officials are looking into whether the position of sheriff should be elected or appointed. The County Chair Commission discussed the agenda item on this Monday meeting. There are thousands of sheriffs in the U.S. The vast majority are elected, though. I don't know. On one side of it, this is one of those cases. I read this, and the first thought I had is, well, shouldn't the community decide, the counties decide, you know, as a whole, who they want as the sheriff? But at the same time, I don't know if – would you – I don't know. I still think – I guess I'm more on the side of the election is the better idea because it gives people the say. And if you don't vote, well, then you threw away your opportunity to say. So you can't really complain about it. So it's – I think that – I don't know. That's an interesting concept. I like the idea of electing our representatives, though. And I think that we've seen it work pretty well. I like the idea of the sheriffs there. Hey, I wouldn't mind – maybe we should apply an election standard to, I don't know, the union head of the Minneapolis Police Department. Maybe the voters should decide who that is. That might be a good idea. Maybe. I don't know. Major Lazer? Yeah, let's do this. All right, we're out today. We will be back on a Wednesday with the Steiner. Have a good one. Till tomorrow. See ya.
Do you recall not long ago when you would walk on the sidewalk? Innocent, remember? All we did was care for each other. But the night was warm. We were bold and young. All around, the wind blows. We would only hold on to let go. The waves roll.